Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Welcome back to Game of Thrones 2 Electric Boogaloo. I'm your host, Anthony. This week, I'm very excited to feature a fan roundtable to talk about Tyrion's darker motives, his darker personality traits, whether Shay is lying to Tyrion, and our first little window into Varys' backstory. So I'm very excited to talk about this with Rey and Robin and Steve. We do have a few sound quality issues for this podcast, and Robin's feed drops out altogether. a couple times. But other than that, I found this conversation highly enjoyable. I hope you do too. Without further ado, here is the gang. You have a few things to plug, Robin. Let's get them out of the way. I might want to edit these out.
No, I just wanted to say that, like, my socials and that I have a podcast about relationships.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Well, if you want to find me on socials, I'm Robin Robotron on all of them. Robin with a Y, because my dad wanted me to be different. Then I also have a podcast with my friend Robot Liz. It's called Relational Circuitry, and it is about relationships of all types.
Fantastic. And Steve, you also have a podcast.
I do. Yeah. My daughter is texting me right now, so I'm obligated to text her back real quick.
That's fine. No, I'll talk a little bit about your podcast. Your podcast is A Sweet Child of Time.
Right.
And it relates to the Wheel of Time adaptation, or the books, or both?
The adaptation, but I'm going to go into the books pretty soon here. Okay. Basically, I have like a TV recap podcast. And I guess what sets us aside a little bit is I have a film critic, Lindsay Dunn, who I do it with. And she does written recaps, like for the written page. So I bring her on. We're friends. I bring her on and she reads her recap word for word. And then we stop every paragraph or two to, you know, discuss things. And I'll like throw in stuff that I noticed that she might not have brought up.
And your podcast is also about relationships.
Sure, the interrelationships between podcasters.
That's right. Wonderful. And then, Ray, do you have a podcast? Would you like a podcast?
Let's start a new
podcast, Ray.
Yeah, I was just trying to be funny enough so that you keep asking me to come back. Maybe you'll hire me. You want to hire me, Anthony?
Yeah, let's do it. I feel like the world needs at least one more podcast.
Why not?
Hey, there's never enough.
Yeah.
All right, I'll just go ahead and make sure that our names are associated with our voices. Hello, I am Anthony.
Hi, I'm Ray.
I'm Robin.
Hello, I'm Steve.
So if you haven't gathered yet, this is a fan roundtable. I like to take the juiciest chapters, the chapters that I find juiciest, and I like to gather a group of people together that I've had interesting interactions with, either on email or in previous formats. And so today I am joined by Ray and Robin and Steve. And I should also mention that each of these folks are part of our House of the Dragon Fantasy Woo! League, mm-hmm. The Stormcrows. And that'll be our auction coming up shortly. So I'm looking forward to that.
Got a little thingy right here.
Yeah. Let's talk Tyrion, shall we?
Yes.
First impressions of this chapter. Anyone?
I was really excited when you said to join you for a Tyrion chapter, and even more excited when I found out this was the chapter that you picked. I think it kind of gets broken down into three big sections, and then all three sections are like bangers, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited to get into it.
I thought it was interesting that Tyrion starts in a sept and it ends in a brothel. I thought that was a nice little sort of mini progression for his character.
Yeah, that's it. It's his character arc in one chapter for the entire series. That's his character arc.
No, it starts in a sept. He goes to a brothel and then he winds up in like a horse's stable or something like that. But you kind of see like the macro of the story and the micro of the story at the same time. Like Tyrion's really worried about these larger incidences of siege warfare and, you know, strategic planning, but he's also like taking a lot of time out of his schedule to scheme to get his bed warmer into the Red Keep.
Got
to
get his lady into the crib.
That's right. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read my introduction and then we can talk in detail about this chapter. Lancel, continuing his duty as Tyrion's double agent, reveals Cersei's plan to hide Tommen at Rossby. After their secret meeting in the Sept, Lancel asks again to be given a place of honor in the coming battle. Tyrion dismisses the boyish knight, and then he takes some time to pray. And he tells Bran to have Bywater intercept the prince and establish himself at Rosby. He hints that Bywater will be made into a lord if all goes well. After a rendezvous with Shay, Varys brings word that Stannis has taken his ancestral fort at Storm's End. This, Tyrion thinks, will hasten the coming battle for King's Landing. Shay asks to be legitimized at court as Tyrion's lady. Tyrion refuses, but seeks to bring her to the Red Keep before the siege. Varys suggests that she be hired as Lawless's maidservant. Varys also shares his experience with dark magic and a bit of his own origin story. Ray, let's start with you. Do you want to start with an observation or a question?
I think I'll start with an observation. This is where you see all of like the deepest parts of Tyrion's character and who he becomes. Yeah. And they're all are represented here, and they're all the things that got left out of the show. Right? Like how much he hates Cersei and like the conniving and the deals that he's making after he gave up Marcella and now he's dealing with Tommen out right. in the Riverlands. Then you got Tysha comes up when you hear the story of Tysha and his first quote-unquote whore lover. Yeah, and I just think like these are the parts of Tyrion's character that got left out of the show. And it's the reason why you see the drop-off towards the end. Because in the beginning, it's the fun Tyrion, right? He gets to have a trial. He gets to...
Well, yeah, this is even before
you know,
that.
Have fun on the wall.
This is top of the world. He's at the top of the world, this guy.
Yeah, this is top Tyrion. Like these... But this chapter... are the parts that you need for the later parts of Game of Thrones, right? Like, we loved Tyrion from season 1 through 4 because of the things mm-hmm. he did, right? The later seasons, he kind of fell off. From, like, season 5 on, he fell yeah. off because the character that was built in these, like, in a chapter like this is not there. I guess that's what I was thinking about the whole time reading this chapter. It's like, this is the Tyrion that's missing in the later seasons of Game of Thrones. Right.
This is like one chapter that's like a full body Tyrion. Because like you said, he's we see him in the Sept praying. That's not normal. We see him slapping Shay. That's not normal. He apologizes to her. We see him being like really sweet about Tommen. But then we see him like, you know, being really bitter about this singer. There's like a whole swell of like emotions. And it's like really brings like a full character to view, like when you take all those little things into respect.
What's interesting about what y'all are saying is because I was thinking, because he doesn't actually go to the brothel in this chapter. He just goes straight to Shay's.
Oh, right.
And yep. I was just looking over the chapter again, and I was thinking that he had heard about Courtenay Penrose and everything at Storm's End before he went, and that's why he was running so fast, but that's not true. He finds that out after from Varys. And so what I'm thinking, listening to y'all guys talk about Tyrion right now, is that because he is on top of the world, he is starting to feel that it might come crashing down on him, and he's starting to panic a little bit.
Making some bad calls, too.
Because he's like, oh, everything's going right for me. Everything's going my way, and this is not how it normally goes when dealing with my family, you know? Because mm-hmm. he's the one that gets the lower end of the stick with them all the time, and now he's actually doing well. But he's like, I got to get to my girl. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Ray, do you feel like Tyrion in this chapter is acting wisely?
I mean, he has a bit of the way he acts with Shay has always been reckless to me.
Yeah.
And this is like a big him and Shay chapter. But I always thought, aside from Shay, like aside from Tyrion's wants and quest for love, he always acts rationally and with a clear head. It's usually when love is involved where he starts going amok, right? Anything he's done with Shay, the stuff he did with Tysha, When there's women involved, that's when he starts or acting I think, crazy.
You know, you mentioned later season Game of Thrones. I was thinking he kind of becomes foolish with Dany too. Like it, whenever there's a woman he falls in love with at some level, he begins to act foolishly. And it's like his one Achilles heel that I feel like Martin is pretty consistent with.
Yeah, and I think he'll keep up with it when he does finally meet her. If he finally meets her, who knows? Maybe we'll never get the new book. But if it does happen, I'm assuming that yes.
Well, yeah, and I think he's trying to... It feels like he's trying his best to be cautious with... Welcome back, Robin. He's trying his best to be cautious about how he deals with... I think he calls her lady love. I think he uses the word love in this chapter. You're almost getting a little glimpse into him. So it's sort of like, even though he's trying to be cautious, he just can't help himself. He's gonna race the horse right to her house. He's not like you said, Robin. He's not gonna go through the little.
He doesn't have time.
Brothel subterfuge like he normally does. And thanks for calling that out, because I did think he had gone to the brothel, but you're totally right. And he almost says, like, if Cersei's got spies, they better be as fast as this horse. And he basically races through Flea Bottom to get to her. And he sees the singer, and he...
lets him go.
Like, he almost threatens the singer, but he doesn't really do anything about the singer at this point. He ends up doing something about the singer much later in the story.
Yeah, that's
but it's fun. Almost like he's trying to be cautious, but he just can't help himself when it comes to.
But it's juxtaposed perfectly with how smart he is about, you know, getting Tom into safety and like taking Cersei's plan and recognizing that as that's a pretty good plan. But I'm going to put my own little spin on it.
Yeah.
So he's thinking with his full mind when it comes to.
Yeah, fully wise, fully intellectual when it comes to anything other than women. He just completely becomes a fool.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think, because of the experience with Tysha.
I think that there might be a few of those in this chapter.
Probably.
Yeah.
Robin, what interested you most about this chapter?
Well, the thing with me is the stories. There's two stories in this chapter that are important, that they offer completely out of context in the series, the TV series. So the Tysha story, in the TV series, he tells Bronn and Shay at the same time, like right when he first meets Shay. And it's like part of a drinking game scenario. Like he never wants to talk about it, but that's not how Tyrion actually is. I feel like Book Tyrion, he uses the Tysha story as a way to read people and gauge whether he can trust them or not based on how they respond to it. Because he tells Bronn, because I had to just look it up today. He tells Bronn when they leave, after they leave the Eyrie, about it. And that's when Bronn says, I think I'd kill somebody who did that to me. And like, if Bronn hadn't have said that, if Bronn had said something different, like mainly making them think that like Tywin's a badass for it or whatever, you know, then he would not have gone on to trust Bronn the way that he does. And when he tells Tysha, when he tells Shay the story, it's because he is afraid of, because of the singer, he's afraid that she's going to get found out. And he knows how cruel his father is and what his father will do to her to hurt him, you know. Well,
he also calls out how helpless he is against his own family. Like, he's almost like, when it comes to the politics of Westeros, I've got armies that I can bring to bear. When it comes against my father or my siblings,
nothing.
All I have are these legs and this twisted spine. So he knows exactly the peril he's in if he ever does have to go against his family.
Exactly. And the same with Varys's story. Varys tells his story about being cut to talk about how dangerous and scary magic is. And the fact that Stannis is using this dark magic means shit is getting really serious in a way that Tyrion doesn't understand. And in the series, he just tells him that story. It's like an offside he's like kidnapped the old sorcerer and has him in a crate, and he tells Tyrion that story, and it makes it about like revenge or whatever, but it's really about like, this guy's getting into some really serious stuff, and we need to not take that for granted.
Okay, I've got a question for the group here. I want everyone to weigh in on this. Varys, this is when we first hear about Varys' origin story, mm-hmm. right? We hear about how he was cut because of dark magic. The voice comes through the flame. He gets sent off. He becomes a child prostitute for a long time. And he becomes a pickpocket, and then he starts stealing secrets instead of stealing money. Should we trust Varys? Is this a story that he's telling Tyrion? Right. Or is this a truth?
I was wondering that too.
Sorry, that was my question. So the question that I was going to bring to the table was, do we think what Varys saw was real? Right? Do we believe him?
He says at the very beginning, or Tyrion observes that Varys' voice changes, and it like has like a different timbre to it when he's telling this story, which could be like a sign that it's a rehearsed lie. Of course, Varys is a master of lying. So then it's like a double negative kind of thing. It's like, well, maybe if I pretend like I'm like nervous, then that's the best way for me to tell a convincing lie. But like Robin, there is like a show and a book version. So the book version has not really been verified, but the show version, in a way, kind of this story has been verified, because when at some point in one of the seasons we won't speak of, there's a red priestess that Varys comes upon, and the red priestess is like, I know what that voice was you heard in the flames. And Varys is all like, what?
So yeah, like, that's true.
That
that's
adds true. A lot of credence to the story.
Yeah. Yes. Seasons.
That's what I said. Like, I don't know how much credence we can put to it.
Didn't happen. That doesn't exist.
Some of my favorite moments of the entire series were in season 7. Yeah. I will say this. Now, Ray, you said that this was your question, so I'll go ahead and chime in on this. I feel like I want to trust him. I feel like I don't know anything about this guy's motives. He's such a fascinating character. If he's lying, I feel like his lies are working on me as a reader. I want to trust that this is true. I want there to be someone who just hates dark magic so much that Stannis made an enemy that he didn't know he made. Stannis has no idea that he's made an enemy out of Varys. And is there anyone in the entire books that you do not want as an enemy? I feel like I want to believe that Varys hates dark magic this much.
Yeah, I think I think he got you, man. I think he got you. I think this is part of like, yeah, Martin. They say Martin does like the 3-step reveals or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You touched on it, Steve, when his voice changed, right? That I felt like, and I listened to it. I didn't read it like a book. I listened to the audiobook. Mm-hmm. And what's his name? Roy Dotrice, the guy who reads.
Dotrice.
He changes his voice at that particular moment to sound more like stern and serious. So hear me out.
Okay.
Interesting.
I think the voice that we are hearing from Varys throughout most of it is the mummer, right? Is the voice that he's putting out there. And it's not until he's like talking about this thing that happened where he starts to get serious. I don't know. Wait, maybe did I just talk myself into believing him? Hold on. Wait, did I just? Yeah. Wait a second. Yeah. Did I just talk myself into believing him?
He's acting all the time, but in this one moment, he's authentic. And that's what his voice changes.
Like, that's his authentic voice.
Yeah.
There's also.
Wait a second.
I also think he's letting Tyrion know a little bit more about him. That's why I believe that it's true, and that he is, because Tyrion, he's got all this on Tyrion, and so he's like, I should probably let him in a little bit. And I don't know. I also think that like the whole thing about Varys being mistrustworthy, and I feel like Anthony, you've talked about this on the podcast before, is like, he doesn't really lie.
on the record.
Like on the record.
He likes to use the truth to deceive, which is always the best kind of deception.
Yeah.
We're talking Wheel of Time stuff here. There's like a chapter of women called Aes Sedai, and they actually cannot lie. They're physically incapable of lying. So they use the truth to tell lies, and they use the truth to deceive. So this is in my home territory.
That sounds like some Isaac Asimov stuff.
Yeah.
I have a point to make, though, that may point to Varys being a liar, though. I hate to like bring up another point.
Okay.
We know that he was in cahoots with the other fellow whose name escapes me. Somebody help me out. Illyrio
Mopatis.
Right on. And they're all about the Valyrians, right? They're like kind of like wanting the Valyrians to come back to power and wanting to get the Targaryens, right? And aren't the Targaryens the ones that are most closely aligned with magic more than any other house that is? I mean, it's a dragon house.
Are we certain that Illyrio and Varys are in cahoots, or is Varys also playing Illyrio? Huh. That's another question that I have.
Don't blow my mind, Anthony. Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Varys is unsure. He doesn't know what's going to happen, so like he's putting his eggs in different baskets.
That's true. I like.
He's that. Like, you know, this is like young girl. We don't know what's going to come of her. Let's just toss her over there and see what happens.
Getting into Varys and Illyrio's intentions is a rabbit hole that'll keep us here for like 17 hours.
It's true.
Right?
Although like, I love Varys. I love Varys, and I love that we're getting a little glimpse. It could be a deception, but we're getting a little glimpse into what motivates him. He's not just a power seeker, this guy. He's got other things that he cares about.
Yeah.
Deeply personal things. Yeah. Personal vendettas that he's...
Well, it's like he cares about the realm. He's got to see what's going
to
happen.
He wants the realm to help people like him, to help the downtrodden, which, you know, you kind of got to admire that on its face anyway.
But even so, even if dark magic, I don't know if he's completely utilitarian. I do think that, like, he's got a vendetta against dark magic, even if it was sort of like you could use dark magic to bring peace to the realm. I don't know if he would be on board with that.
See, I think it's not all magic. It's like the specific kind of like shadow demon baby, you know.
He could go with Siegfried and Roy then. Like he would dig those.
And the kind that involves, you know, right. Mutilating yeah. Children.
I also try to be wary where I think about if all the magic that's being presented in the books is real or are like hallucination and stuff. Because like, you know, like you got on one side Stannis and Melisandre and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then like Varys just got cut. Like he could very well just be hallucinating whatever sure. He heard in the flames or like it doesn't. I don't think all the magic in that is ever written in this show is always like one.
Well, he was also right? Dosed with something. Mm-hmm. It didn't dull his pain.
Yeah. Yeah. It just kept him paralyzed, but he still felt everything.
Yeah, he couldn't move or speak,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which means he could have been in, like, delirious pain.
Absolutely. Yes.
And just heard random stuff in the fire.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think not all magic is magic in Game of Thrones.
That's what I was going to ask.
You were going to say, Robin?
Oh, I was just going to ask, Ray, if you thought that Varys was lying outright or if he was misinterpreting what was going on at the time.
So I think that's the part that did he really hear something in the flame or was it just like he believes, I think Varys believes what happened, but I don't think that there was some force in this flame here. I think you need a red woman.
I kind of agree with that too. I agree with that. He did hear something at that moment. I don't know if it was magic or not. I don't mind. I'm brave enough to speak about this. I'm a neurodivergent person. I've heard voices that don't exist. I have seen things that are not there. And it's easy to like, when you're in that frame of mind, to like slip out of reality and believe that what you saw was real. So it's...
Well, human perception is so much about projection. It's not just about receiving the world around you. It's also about what you're projecting onto the world, right? So...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It could very well be, he could be telling the truth.
Look, dude just had his twig and berries cut off, man. Like he's seeing something wild.
It's pretty traumatic.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because it says root to stem. So I don't know if the berries may still be there.
I'm pretty sure it's all gone, man.
On the twig. I don't know. I spent way too much time thinking if what's going on with Varys.
All right. I want to call out one more thing about Varys. All right.
Okay, go ahead.
This could be all a lie. It could be that he's not a eunuch at all.
Oh.
Right? Do we have any proof about any of this? Right. It could be that he lets the story be known about him that he's a eunuch so that people do not overestimate him. Sure. You know, in other words, people will not see him coming. He's so good at disguises. How much of this is all just part of the disguise?
I don't think you can fake that. I don't think you can fake that.
I still believe it happened.
I think this way too. Look at how much trouble Arya had hiding her gender, right? Like when she was like in the woods peeing, or
she's a kid.
Like there was a whole thing about like trying to hide. Like, do you really think Varys can hide the fact that he has junk?
I do.
For a really long time.
He's an experienced mummer. Been on stage. Knows how to do stuff like that. I mean,
can't wear tight pants.
I mean,
long flowing robes cover up.
That's
a lot.
Right. That's right.
Well, do they? I wonder. Yeah. I mean, maybe if we go back and see what he's wearing.
Tuck and roll, baby.
If Varys isn't showing outward attraction to women in court, chances are they would never question him. Because, like, that's when it becomes an issue. Like, when you have to prove you're a eunuch is when, like, you know, you got to work with the women, you know, and be like, well, we can't trust any of them. So, you know.
Varys could talk his way out of that. I think if somebody was like, I need you to disrobe. I need to examine your genitals. Varys, I think, could talk his way out of that situation. I believe he could.
I mean, it depends. If he came to King's Landing, like, as a much younger man.
I like that we're talking openly about genitalia as forthright as we are. Why don't we move on? Steve, have we asked for your observation yet? I feel like maybe we haven't done that yet.
I'm going to go back to Tyrion, I guess, then. This is not an observation about Tyrion necessarily. It's just an offhand remark that was made about a wager that Dancy, one of the prostitutes at Chatayaya's, had made.
Yeah.
And she had bet somebody else, like up some black pearls, that she could get Tyrion to sleep with her. And, you know, the bet was like, oh, he's not going to do that because he loves Shay so much. Well, Dancy lost that bet. Tyrion did not sleep with her and did not fall for her advances. And he stayed true to Shay. So I think that's just, you know, just another offhand proof that, you know, Tyrion is desperately head over heels in love with Shay so much that he makes bad decisions.
First, I got to point out that they don't think it's Shay. Nobody knows about Shay. They think it is Chataya's daughter.
Right. That's right.
Who is a Summer Islander.
That's right.
And they think that's who he's spending all of his time with. And she's actually the one who gets beaten.
The subterfuge.
Because that's who the bet is with. And of course, she knows he's not going to do it because he's not interested in her. But I do have to say that when he marries Sansa, he talks about being attracted to her and wanting her in that moment. And he talks about, you know, the whole idea of like, and if it's never, and then my watch begins. Like,
yeah.
If Sansa was into it, Tyrion would probably have no problem doing it.
Without a doubt.
And it's like what he said about Tysha and about like what Tywin did to her. And that, like, he should have not done it at the end, but, you know, his cock betrayed him and he had to do it. And it's like, that's just like, okay, Tyrion.
That's right.
You didn't really have to. You could have, like, taken your cock somewhere else and taken care of it somewhere else, but you did it anyway because you believe now that she was selling her body and thus, you know, deserved all of it. Like, that's another thing that really sucks is that, like, Tyrion is hurt. More, it's like he talks more about being hurt by like Jamie and stuff, but like he feels more animosity towards Tysha.
Okay.
Because he never turns against Jamie.
I want to talk, since we're already here, I want to ask this question. I noticed that, you know, we were talking about deception. I noticed that Shay is caught lying in this chapter. And I think that this foreshadows her betrayal in later books. She says, "My father made me his kitchen wench, and that's why I ran away." And then Tyrion's like, "Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought your father was sexually abusing you, and that's why you ran away." And she like kind of saves it. You know, she kind of like, well, both are true. Mm-hmm. But I think this maybe is our first indication that Shay is not telling Tyrion the truth Absolutely. About where she comes from or what her motives are.
I think that just comes from being a sex worker, especially in that time period. You don't want to tell everybody everything about you. You want to keep some shit private.
That's true, but that would also say that, you know, you're just giving a different reason for the lie. Mm-hmm. I think she is lying.
I think it's well established, that he met her like in Tywin's camp. So it seems pretty likely that she's of that. And that was actually one of my questions that I was going to bring to the forefront, Anthony. Is now an appropriate time to ask that question?
Yes, please.
Is Tywin testing Tyrion through Shay in this chapter? I think there's a couple of points here that could point to that. Because, you know, Tywin explicitly says, don't take her to court. And that's what she's asking for in this chapter, is to take me to court and figure out some way to do it. Another thing she does that's questionable that I think might have been brought about by Tywin is she suggests killing Cersei. That's kind of out of character for her. And I think that might have been something maybe Tywin might have, you know, been like, you know, throw this past Tyrion and see what he says about this one. See how he reacts to this. And he reacted the way he should have.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
So you're saying Shay is a plant from the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that too.
I think with Show so Shay.
Show Shay.
Show. Show Shay. Because they aged her up for the show.
Yeah.
And so that Shay, I feel, would have been in league with Tywin and under his orders. But Book Shay at 18 years old, I think not. I think that she is just excited to be there, and she does not want to be stuck at this place alone. Although I do think that I do see Steve's point about she really is pushing going to the castle. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that Tywin would suggest killing Cersei.
No.
He would
say to her, like, propose that proposal to Tywin.
Well,
to
no,
Tyrion,
that's what I mean.
Just to see how he'd react.
I don't think he would even bring it up. I don't think he would trust a sex worker enough to have her not decide to just do it herself.
Well, like you said, she's 18.
And be like, hey, I could do this and move on.
I think she's like a star yet, 18-year-old.
But I really think that she is hurt. Yeah. And I think in the book, when she turns on Tyrion, that it is because she is hurt. She thinks that he is in league with Sansa and he didn't do what she wanted. And she doesn't have anywhere else to go, you know, because Tyrion's now in jail. She has nothing other than to turn herself over to Cersei and Tywin. Because what else would she do?
Ray, you were going to chime in and say something about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of blowing my mind. I've never thought about that. And I'm trying to think, like, if Tywin is capable of having, like, that close of a relationship with a prostitute, given his history, like, with his father and his stepmother or something, right? Like, is he capable of having such a close relationship with a prostitute, where he's using that person to manipulate his son?
Yeah, that's what I think. So I think he wouldn't trust her.
Well, this was first posed to me in an email a couple years ago, and I'm sorry if you're listening and you sent the email. I don't remember who sent it, but just breaking in to give credit to John T., who emailed me at book@baldmove.com suggesting that maybe, just maybe, Shay was Tywin's plant all along. Thank you, John. The person who emailed me initially about this made a great point, and that is right after Tyrion meets Shay for the very first time, Bronn goes and collects her, steals her from some other knight who's not happy about it. Bronn brings Shay to Tyrion's tent. Tyrion leaves the tent the next morning, goes to eat with his father. His father says, "You're going to be hand of the king, go to court, do not bring that whore." The emailer asks this question: how does Tywin know about Shay already? And then we fast forward all the way to the end and we find out that Shay is warming Tywin's bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, when did that relationship begin?
Yeah.
And it could have been, it could be that she was a plant from the very beginning.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I'm just not buying Tywin's close relationship with a prostitute, like given his history.
He's close enough to sleep with her eventually. Well,
that's not that close. I'm talking about cahoots and plans and like.
Yeah, I don't think he would put enough faith in her.
Getting inside information from your son. That's a really deep, close. That's a closer trust. Personal relationship and a level of trust that you have that I don't think Tywin would give to a sex worker, given his history.
I agree with you.
I don't think Tywin would give that to any woman.
I think that he would have an intermediary, like somebody like the Master of Spies. Not in this case, not Varys. But, you know, Tywin has to deal with all kinds of things as like a man of importance. So he has to have butlers make his bed and, you know, draw his bath water and make his meals and stuff like that. I don't think he would take any of those servants aside and tell them what to do, but he would tell the head of the servants, you know, make sure this guy's doing his thing. Probably the same way with Shay. Yeah. I think it's probably like an intermediary involved, like Bronn, perhaps.
I think it's too many people find out about a conspiracy.
I think that's too big of a conspiracy.
Tywin is too shrewd.
Too shrewd.
He would keep it all to himself.
Okay, here's a new theory.
Okay.
Never been proposed before. Shay is actually a faceless man. Oh. And Tywin, with his considerable wealth, has hired someone like Jaqen and H'ghar to come along, pose as a sex worker. She's not a prostitute at all. He's spending a lot of money to bring in someone to spy on Tyrion and make sure he knows what his son's motives are. Yes?
No.
That's the worst faceless man I've ever heard in my life.
Just think about it. Why? Right? Like why? Apparently getting a faceless man is really expensive. So
they can afford that, though.
No. But the thing is why? Like, why would you want this?
To get intel on his son, to make sure his son is.
He knows his son has a weak spot for sex workers, and he thinks this is the best way to spy on my son.
For what outcome? What's the end game, right? Is the end game I need information to justify killing him? Do I need information so that I can steer Tyrion towards.
You gotta look for the motive.
Being able to run Casterly Rock, right? Like, mm-hmm. if the motive is, I don't think any of the motives that we can come up with would justify some elaborate faceless man.
So like Mission Impossible.
Yeah, like those people were hired to kill Valyrians, right? Like they had dragons. Like this little dwarf in King's Landing doesn't need a faceless man to find out what he's doing.
All right, agree to disagree. That's fine.
Hey, yeah. I'm half. I think that not with the faceless man, but I think that TV show Shay, yes. Book Shay, no.
All right. Group discussion questions.
I thought it was interesting that that Bronn can't read. This is when I discovered this.
Yeah, I think that this is one way that Martin is trying to make this feel like an authentically medieval place where, like, reading is something that you can be schooled on if you have enough wealth and class.
And even then,
by and large, most commoners do not know how to read. And of course, Bronn is one of the very few commoners that we actually have a strong relationship with in these books. So it would make sense that he doesn't
know. Even lords don't read in some lords don't even read in this world. That's why they have the maesters. Like the Maces will read to them. And that's why everyone thought that the Maces were full of shit. Like maybe they weren't reading the right stuff.
Yeah, this reminds me of Varys too, because Varys, one of his early tricks was to steal people's secrets. He would go and like have somebody, you know, look at their books, transcribe the books like on another page and bring that to him. Mm-hmm. And the person who was bringing it to him couldn't read. They were just following like the wavy lines on the page. But that's a pretty ingenious way that Varys used unread people that couldn't read. Yeah.
Well, doesn't he say that he actually teaches people to read? He then evolved to teaching the kids to read so that then the person that they were stealing from would never even know that something was missing.
Someone's got to worry about the education of the youth of King's Landing. Right. Why not?
That's
Varys,
why he cares about the people.
Yeah, you didn't hear about Varys' No Child Left Behind policy down in Three Bottom? Come on, man. No Child Left Behind.
I wanted to ask this question, and that is, Tyrion prays to the warrior god, the face of the seven faced god that is the warrior. And he prays for his brother, Jaime. He says, he's one of yours. Lights a candle, right? That makes sense. And then he goes and prays for himself by lighting a candle to the stranger.
Yeah.
And my question is, why does Tyrion associate himself with the stranger?
Because that's what society has deemed him to be. As a dwarf, he is always going to be the stranger. And he also killed his mother. So,
well, yes, allegedly.
He came into the world with death.
I hadn't thought about the mother part of it. That's
maybe it's the one he identifies the most with, because I'm thinking about the other ones. And he's not going to identify with the female characters because, you know, he's a Game of Thrones guy. So that leaves the father, the warrior. There's one more. What is the
builder?
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's right. Which, you know, he has a small body that he can't do that kind of stuff with. That leaves the stranger.
The smith.
That's right. If he wants to be religious, that's the closest he's got to somebody to identify to.
I was doing a little bit of research on what the stranger represents. And in general, he represents death. And he can be, you know, he's sort of gender fluid, but they usually call him a he. But he's also not necessarily human. And he represents death most prominently. He also represents something like sort of a figure for outcasts.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that might be along the lines of what you were saying, Robin. Like that's how he identifies himself as an outcast.
Yeah, that's how he's treated. The only thing that gets him anything is that he's a Lannister.
In many ways, he's kind of like at the top of the heap. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's sort of like at the center of power. He's like ruling the capital of the city.
But he's still the imp. So,
but he's still himself. Yeah, that's right. He's still trapped in himself.
I think that's how it ends the chapter, isn't it?
Yes.
Wait, how does the chapter end? I forget.
Yeah.
He says something like the cities, they don't have water.
Because they don't have.
Yeah, there you go.
Here, let's see. Don't you see the jest, Lord Varys? Tyrion waved a hand at the shuttered windows at all the sleeping city. Stormend is fallen and Stannis is coming with fire and steel, and the gods alone know what dark powers, and the good folk don't have Jaime to protect them, nor Robert, nor Renly, nor Rhaegar, nor their precious Knight of Flowers. Only me, the one they hate. He laughed again. The dwarf, the evil counselor, the twisted little monkey demon. I am all that stands between them and chaos. So even though he's at the top, they still hate him and see him as beneath them.
And he sees himself the same way, too. He's a pretty self-deprecating guy.
Okay, that's a very strong argument. I do think that there's another way to look at this. And I think I probably agree with you on that, but let me just throw out this other option first. He lights a candle in front of the god of death, and then he goes and sees Shay. Is this literary foreshadowing that he will eventually kill Shay?
I don't know. You know, he's a gardener kind of writer, so I don't know. I don't know if he planted that as a foreshadow or if that, you know, kind of happened along the way. Very interesting observation. Mm-hmm.
Is this the only time he does this to the stranger?
He doesn't go to the Sept very often.
Yeah, that's right. He doesn't.
Okay, in Dance of Dragons, he's on a ship on his way to Illyrio, and he has this full-on chapter where he's praying to the Father over and over and over, and he associates the Father with his own father who he's just killed. Again, someone he's killed. And so he's praying and praying and praying, not to the stranger, but to the Father in this case. So he does pray from time to time. In this case, he's praying to the stranger. And I'll also point out that he does have this singer, Simon the Silver Tongue, killed. He has Braun kill Simon and throw him in a bowl of brown or whatever. So there are at least two characters in this chapter that we meet that Tyrion kills.
Good call. I forgot about Simon. I thought he got off kind of easy. And now that you mention it, yeah.
No, that's after.
He doesn't die until the next book. Yeah,
yeah. I'm surprised he lasts that long, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's after Cersei kills the wrong person, right?
Right. He like sings this song. He's got this song about Tyrion that's very thinly veiled that sort of reveals that he's in love with a prostitute. And
he's about to sing at the wedding, at Joffrey's wedding.
Right. So eventually he will have Simon killed.
He gets to go.
All right. Notable introductions in this chapter. We hear about Coppersmith's Wind for the very first time. And of course, we meet Simon Silvertongue and his fat belly for the first time. Notable departures. We hear that Courtney Penrose has exited the narrative. And before I move on to show differences, I do want to kind of talk a little bit about this business about Penrose, because this is the chapter where we hear confirmation that Stannis has used the smoke monster again.
Mm-hmm.
And Varys describes the event, makes it sound like, oh, okay, Mel did it again. Mel used the same trick one more time. She's assassinated the guy. And then, of course, Penrose's nephew opens up the gates.
That was one of the questions that I told you I had a bunch of questions written down. That was one of my questions here. How exactly did Penrose die? Because it's interesting to think about if Tyrion was right, if it was just some faceless man or somebody sneaking in his room, something really, you know.
No, it was that ghost, because Davos was there. Davos wasn't there for Renly in the book. He's right there for this one. So Davos knows what happened because he was there. No discussion. So, I mean, obviously,
Davos sees the smoke baby get birthed and slide through the bars of the portcullis underground. Davos doesn't see anything else, but we do hear tell of the murder in this chapter.
I'm assuming the smoke baby just shoved him off the battlements, because that's what they said happened.
Just
jumped off
the battlements. Yeah.
So instead of a ghost sword, it was easier. Just shove him off.
I like to think he was like lured by like a beautiful ghostly image and
beautiful smoke baby.
Yeah, but they know that they wasn't
like Stannis.
They know it wasn't suicide because he was a dude that wanted to fight the very next day. So we know it was foul play.
Robin, you had a few show differences that you wanted to point out. Did you already address those, or were there more?
I think I did. I mean, well, there's like the whole thing about how poor Courtney Penrose, one of the seemed to be decent men in Westeros, didn't get any show credit. Nor did
that's right.
I don't know how to say his name because he's not in the show. Jacqueline Bywater, Jacelyn Bywater.
Yeah, I would say Jacelyn Bywater, but I don't know if I'm saying that correctly or not.
Yeah, neither will I. We'll never know.
unless George
gives an interview about him.
After Renly dies, the show just says, okay, Stannis has Storm's End.
Yeah, you're right. The other major difference between the show and the books is that Sansa becomes a hybrid character with Lawless. She's the one that's almost raped. Mm-hmm. And now Lawless in the book, Lawless is going to have Shay as a maidservant.
Have you ever been a handmaiden before?
Yes.
For whom?
Lady Zorif.
Lady Zorif.
Lady Zorif.
There is no Lady Zorif in this city.
She wasn't in this city.
Well, I don't know how they did things in that city, but in this city, handmaidens wait on ladies, not the other way around. And I don't have time to answer 1,000 questions and teach you how to do your job.
Do you want me to leave?
Just brush my hair.
And that's sort of a way to get Sansa and Shay in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, they took a lot of the everyone at court, like all the young ladies at court, and just merged them all into Sansa.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of true. It's kind of true. The other, let's see here. Of course, Simon the Silver Tongue is not in the show. The subterfuge with Tommen. Tommen's going to be, you know, they're going to dye his hair and send him off to Rosby. That doesn't happen in the show. The one last thing I was going to point out that I probably should have said before was that Tyrion also mentions very clearly that Kinslaying is accursed by the gods. Right. And then, of course, you know, so he lights the candle to the stranger, who's the god of death. He goes and he goes to Shay, who's he's going to eventually kill. He's going to eventually kill the singer. Right. But he's also going to eventually kill his father. And so this chapter kind of foreshadows that as well. He is saying with his own lips, I will eventually be accursed by the gods.
Right. He in this chapter, he not only like Shay presents the, you know, you could just kill Cersei. And that's when Tyrion says, no, you know, anybody who does that's cursed. Uh-huh. But then like later on in this exact same chapter, he talks about how he used to daydream about hiring a faceless man to kill Cersei.
Right.
So I think that points to, you know, he's up for some foul play.
Foreshadowing that Shay is really a faceless man.
Yeah, there you go, Anthony. You got it. Congrats.
I knew we'd get there at some point. Is that kinslaying taboo only a Faith of the Seven thing?
That's a good question. I don't think so, because...
No, the Starks don't do it either, and they're not for the Faith of the Seven.
I think Craster has that view as well.
That's right, he does.
Is it?
And Craster is up doing his own religion.
I'm thinking about Essos.
Maybe just a Westeros? Or do they? I wonder.
I couldn't see a good Braviosi man doing such. I could never see that. So,
well, thank you all for helping me cover this chapter. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having us.
And I will see you all very soon for our auction.
That's right.
Can't wait.